Hi, I'm Skating PJ, and this is Let's Talk About It, the Skate Ontario podcast, where we're going to get up close and personal with members of our skating family who have a connection to Ontario. So, let's talk about it. Hi, everybody. As promised, at Skating PJ here, and I have a great guest that is none other than Olympic and world medalist Debbie Wilkes, my good friend. Debbie, thank you for joining me.
My pleasure, Peach. I always know we're going to get into trouble somewhere.
Yes, indeed. And certainly this is no exception. So we all know we're in the Olympic season, and that is something that holds a special place in my heart, yours as well. And you've worn a couple of different hats at the Olympic Games. And I want to go through sort of like the backstage version of your experience as an athlete and medalist, your experience as a reporter on this on site of the maybe arguably one of the biggest figure skating stories ever, the 2002 Olympic Games. And then your experience as, can I say, team leader at the Olympic Games in 2010, correct?
Correct.
All right. We got lots to talk about and very little time. So let's get at her. Talk to me first about being an athlete, and I want to hear about the podium.
Oh, wow. It's something, it's certainly a memory that I go back to often. I remember being terrified. I was quite a few years younger than most of my competitors. Plus, they were very seasoned. My partner, Guy Ravel, and I had, although we'd been on the international scene for a number of years, due to certain situations, for instance, the canceling of Worlds in 1961 in Prague. Then in 1963, I fractured my skull during the practice sessions for Worlds in Cortina, Italy. So I only had a couple of years experience really competing at the highest level. So coming into Innsbruck in 1964, while I knew we were very well trained, the whole Olympic experience is so far beyond any other international experience competing that I had, just the size of it. And back in those days, it wasn't anything like it is today. We did not go to the opening ceremonies because our event, we were competing that same day. So our coach said, no way. And that was probably the right decision. We trained, there was the arena inside, and then most of our training was done outside of the arena on an outdoor ice sheet. Although we had done some training here in Toronto, skating outdoors, again, the whole Olympic experience just ramped everything up. It was an amazing adventure. Of course, back in those days, the judges were still sitting on the ice and, you know, pulling up their 5 points. Some of the ice surface was cut off a little bit. That was something we had to adjust to. It was the first time that that I had competed seriously against the competitors from the Soviet Union, Ludmila Belousova and Oleg Protopopov, legendary. We became good friends, actually, although they were a lot older than I was. They were lovely people. Eventually, they won the event. Day of competition, Guy and I were actually third. And standing on the podium, we were in our Hudson Bay jackets, of course, extremely proud. It was a magnificent feeling. And probably a feeling of I guess I'd call it patriotism, that exceeded even the tremendous feeling I had representing Canada at other events. But there is something so colorful and magnetic about that Olympic experience, to be able to wear Canada's colors, the best, absolute best. Just to kind of continue on with that story a little bit, 2 years later, the German team, Marika Kilius and Hans-Jürgen Bäumler, were disqualified. The story which I was led to understand was that they had signed some kind of professional contract prior to the games. And so
which was a no-no, which was a no-no.
Big to do. Back in those days, amateur really meant amateur, in that no money could ever pass to your hands for anything. My partner Guy was a tremendous athlete at so many levels. He tried to teach swimming one summer and was told that he could not do that because he'd be paid. And that would imply that we were professional as skaters, and very, very strict back in those days. Anyway, we moved up to the silver medal, which was quite nice. I didn't even have to perform. we to this day now, many years later, the German team was reinstated. And so we share the silver medal with them. It's still a great honor. And well, of course, one of the highlights of my life.
Naturally. And an Olympic medal, regardless of stripe, is just remarkable. Did that little girl from Unionville ever think that she would be on an Olympic podium? I'm going back to Tinkerbell days.
Yes, my first solo. My first solo in the Unionville Carnival. I was very competitive. And I remember as a young child, I'd already started skating. My mom and dad were great lovers of music. So we had the latest hi-fi in our living room. And of course, records, which my dad would play. And to me, that was something that kind of soaked into me, that appreciation for music. So I would put a record on and I would dance around the living room pretending I was skating. And my mom came in one day and said to me, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm performing at the Olympic Games."
Isn't that wild, eh?
Oh, I was obnoxious.
Anyway. Have a wooden case for your records?
Yes, we did. Oh man, things have changed. Technology has changed.
And has advanced things. Yeah. One last question sort of about your experience at the Olympic Games. Were you disappointed to not be able to walk in the opening ceremony, or were you at an age, because you were a teenager, where you didn't really understand the whole enormity of the experience?
Yeah, that's correct. And again, I can't emphasize enough that the opening ceremonies were nothing like they are today. It was kind of an official, let's get started kind of thing. It wasn't this celebration that is today. That said, yes, I was somewhat disappointed. But I also had my focus very clearly on performance and what was needed to deliver the best job we could do.
Amazing. Okay, I'm going to fast forward now a few years to the 2002 Olympic Games, which of course featured, what is it with the pair skaters and the whole co-sharing of the medals and the dramatic stuff that goes on? But anyway, what I want to know, at the time you were working for CTV, CTV Sports, is that right?
Yes, it's right. CTV TSN.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And you were not there in your professional capacity to start with. So let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, that was really a very interesting event. The producer of my ice show at the time, she and I, of course, when you're in the skating world, and particularly in the wonderful position that I was given, you become very close to some of the competitors. You know their stories. You know some of the stories you can't tell. And anyway, she and I had become very close friends with both Elvis and Jamie and David.
Jamie Sully and David Pelche, for those who don't know. Yep. Yes. And Elvis Stoico.
Yes. And so we thought, gosh, with the Olympic Games being in Salt Lake City, that was pretty close. So we cooked up a scheme that we were going to try to go, even if it was just for a couple of days. We didn't have tickets. We didn't have anywhere to stay. But we thought, we'll figure it out. And we did. A very close friend of ours from TV was working the Olympic Games. She allowed us to stay in her room on a cot. And
not together on a cot. You each had a cot. Let's be clear. It wasn't that bare bones.
No. And we managed through Canada House and through other skating friends, Michelle Kwan in particular, to get tickets for some of the events. Actually, it wasn't Michelle Kwan, it was Peggy Fleming.
Right.
Yes, sorry, I'm getting my ears mixed up. And so we did get tickets to both the men's and the pairs. Fortunately, we were sitting very close to other Canadian, some were officials, some were there like us as tourists. And of course, when the pair marks went up, the marks were very good, but I was sitting beside a judge and we both looked at each other, comparing sort of quickly the scores for the Soviets and for Jamie and David. And we both went, oh, this does not look good.
Well, let's just stop here for just one second to say that those of us in the building, myself included, said, because these two teams, we're talking about Elena Berezhnaya and Anton Sigurdice, we're talking about Jamie Sully and David Pelche, they were even. They were very evenly matched in terms of skill, in terms of results, in terms of all kinds of stuff. It really could have gone either way on any given day. It was a race that was too tight to call. But on this day, Jamie and David were perfection.
Flawless.
Yes. And Elena and Anton had some errors. Correct. So it's not that, it's just that the marks were kind of, because of the level of the two performances. I just wanted to put that into context for our audience.
Yes, I'm glad. And of course, the result was stunning.
The Russians won at that time.
The Russians won. Jamie and David had been world champions in 2001. So naturally, they were coming in perhaps slightly favored.
Yes.
Then it would be safe to say all hell broke loose. There was accusations of I don't even know how to say it. Find me the right words. Judging indiscrepancies or judging problems.
Or we could just say it this way. Shenanigans.
Shenanigans, good word. And it all started to bubble up. I'm sitting in the stands at this point. My cell phone rings. It's TSN saying, are you there? Yes. TSN didn't have the rights for the Olympic Games at that point. And I said, yeah, I'm here. And they said, can you follow this story? Can you get to the bottom of it? Keep us posted. So I ended up staying for the whole Olympic Games. And following this story, which was thrilling. And today I'm convinced, as I look back, that had those games not been in the U.S. and followed so closely by U.S. media, that problem would have never surfaced.
You know, I like to think that good prevails. So I like to think that regardless of where it might have started, that the good thing would have happened. I know that as an announcer at those games, what was fascinating for me on ice level is the results came up and it was just, and the person beside me who was sort of running the event for the international organization was furious. And of course, I didn't know why. And then the judges had to file behind us to get off the judges' stand and to go into the back area and to get out of, get off the panel and get out of the way. So all the judges filed behind us, except one, the French judge, Marie-Hélène Le Guigne, who was the person who was ultimately accused of the shenanigans. And my colleague from the International Federation put his foot across. He had a broken leg at the time, put his foot across and would not let her pass, which, again, not understanding anything of what's going on. And the at those games, the medal ceremony took place on the field of play. So we're about to get ready for the medals, and we go to announce the medal ceremony. And over here to my right is this solitary lone judge who's sort of standing there like this, and I thought, my goodness, she looks like she has a really bad headache. I wonder if she needs some Advil or something. That's what's going through my mind. So little did I know that there were any sort of things going on. And from that point forward, there was even a camera that was on the announcers. We called it the announcer cam, just in case we were up to trouble. So it was a very, people were very, very sensitive. It was very sort of touchy at that time. So did you, because you're a non-rights holder, TSN was a non-rights holder, you did not have access to the regular places that the rights-holding broadcaster, who at the time would have been CBC, they had. So where were you doing your reports?
On a rooftop. It was crazy. It was a lot of fun. And I mean, we would, I was very fortunate to have my producer, Antoinette Catricala. She, of course, has a nose for news. And we got our story and information by walking through the adjacent shopping mall to the rink, where we'd stumble around, recognizing certain people, recognizing some officials. And we were digging the story like crazy. Of course, being pretty good friends with Jamie and David was very helpful. It was an absolute barn burner of a story. And ultimately, look what happened. I mean, it still didn't make it quite right, but it at least honored the tremendous performance that Jamie and David had given. Plus, one of the other important things, the byproduct of this, was that the International Skating Union was already trying to develop a new scoring system, which would be much harder to manipulate. Mm-hmm. And I think this particular incident, as difficult as it was for everyone, really put the pedal to the metal for creating the new, what we then called the new system.
Not so new anymore, Deb.
No. Do you and know undergoing changes now.
Yes. Yes, actually, yes, trying to always improve it. Yeah. You know what I think? I'm just going to toss this in so, and our viewers feel free to sort of comment what you think. But I really believe that when the shenanigans happen on the judging stand, it's not of the athlete's making. So I believe that the co-gold medal was the best possible outcome in this scenario. I don't believe ever that to have taken it away from Elena and Anton would have been the correct response, because this was not of their doing. They were brilliant pair skaters in their own right. Yeah. We all know in skating that sometimes you're the windshield and sometimes you're the bug. So you don't have any control over what goes on. So I think that the fact that all four skaters ended up on the top rung of the podium was the right choice.
I
know that very many more than not, that judges and officials all want the same thing, and that is correct results, people doing the right thing at the right time. So it's I love to see the progress.
There have been some bad actors.
Of course, sure. Everywhere, in everything.
Yeah, and I really applaud the ISU for keeping front and center in their focus. They want the right results too.
Yes.
If you look at it from the various countries' perspectives, there's a lot of pressure. Money for training, money for sports programs only flows if there's a lot of success on the international scene. While I hate it, there is a lot of pressure on a judge to favor in any way they can skaters representing their own country, or certain kinds of pushes and shoves over the years from other countries in some kind of what I will call, not to make it too nefarious, but what I will call deals. And I think that this is has been in the past a real black mark on the sport, and unfortunately undermining the tremendously wonderful work that our judges and technical panels do, the kind of training they have, the kind of history they have. They are skating fans just like the audience, and to have their knowledge undermined, I think has been a real disservice to the sport. Fortunately, things have really, really improved over the years. And that is a testament to the goals of the national federations and the International Skating Union.
I agree. Okay, we're going to move ahead now, another few years to 2010, the Olympic Games, Canada's pride and joy. So many success stories came out of those Olympic Games. Figure skating was a place of drama again. And you were backstage with the team as a team leader at figure skating. Talk to me about that experience. What does that even mean? What are you doing? What do you see? What do you know?
Oh my God, you have to be a mother, a friend, a confidant, a coach, a teacher. Coaching and teaching are a little bit different. It is a multi-discipline position, I will say. Now, fortunately, this wasn't new to me. I had been with Skate Canada for a number of years at that point, and had been honored as team leader, co-team leader on a number of occasions. Team leader to the skating team, not yes. to the Olympic team. So it requires a very delicate balance. Sometime I was working with some wonderful people. The medical team was incredible. My co-team leader, also executives from Skate Canada. Honestly, their direction and guidance through a really extraordinary experience with Joanny Rochette, particularly with her mother dying in Vancouver during the games prior to her competing. required some real expertise and guidance from those folks who knew how to handle this kind of situation. Sorry, my phone.
I like that ring. I want to borrow that. So Shawnee Rochette was part of the team for sure. And you're right, that required a very delicate dance because there were protocols that were in place about the athletes' village and who could come and go from within. It's a very sort of sacred space where athletes can feel safe and undisturbed and the media is not there and whatever. So I applaud the organizing committee. I think that's who would have been responsible for allowing certain concessions in Joanne's case. Are you rinkside when skaters perform? Was there anything that jumped out? I mean, Patrick Chan was on that team.
Scott.
Yep.
Yeah, what a great team.
Yes.
It depends. The skater will often have a particular person that they're very comfortable with. Of course, medical team is always right at ringside. The co-team leaders are always right at ringside, but we decide ahead of time who is the kind of number one person for that athlete. We really tried, especially in Vancouver, we really tried to analyze every situation and make decisions based on what was best, we felt, for the skater. And a lot of people contributed to that decision. In Joanne's case, medical was front and center. Dr. Julia Lean, a tremendously savvy, kind, caring, very experienced with athletes under stress. She really led the team through that situation. And at the same time, we wanted to be sure that while Joe needed extra attention and very special attention, we didn't want any member of the rest of the team to feel that they were being ignored. So, or put in a second, sort of second to Joanne. So we were extremely careful about how that was handled. Of course, with both Patrick and Tessa and Scott and the kind of expectations that were on their shoulders, that was a whole different kind of pressure. We just, I think, very successfully managed to understand the headspace that each of those athletes were in. And with some great communication, like the friendships that developed throughout that games have continued. And to learn to have the privilege of being that up close and personal to those amazing athletes was a pretty special adventure.
So where were you when Tessa Virtue and Scott Moyer in that historic moment won the gold medal at the Vancouver Olympic Games? And what did that mean for the mayhem that ensued in terms of media and attention? And they were so young. Oh, my goodness. They look like they're babies when I go back and look at that. So where were you and what was that moment like? And then them on top of the podium.
Much of it is a blur. I was standing ringside, but kind of back a little bit, just off the kiss and cry. And I have to say, the looks on their faces as they came off the ice, I mean, it was almost like they thought they should have been last instead of first. That expression of sheer delight, disbelief. Jaw dropping.
What did you, in that moment, did you say anything to your colleagues who were part of that support team?
We had a system and our own choreography for all of this, which was developed through years of experience. The hardest part following the kiss and cry is getting skaters through the press and media backstage. Skaters will often ask for advice. What should they say? My message to them was always, what is your message? How do you feel? Speak from the heart. And I mean, managing the hundreds of journalists backstage was pretty incredible. But, you know, our skaters are so well educated and well trained about how to manage these situations. Sometimes it's almost impossible to believe they're as young as they are. They treat, in most cases, they treat everyone as if they were the only person they wanted to talk to. It's a particularly Tess and Scott. They were during their competitive years wonderful ambassadors for the sport and for Canada
and for Ontario. Don't you forget that audience.
Yes.
You know what? This has been, as I knew it would be, a very, very speedy half hour. I want to thank you, Debbie Wilkes, Olympic and world silver medalist, for talking to me today about your Olympic experiences. Thank you again. And this has been another episode of Let's Talk About It. Bye for
Thanks,
now.
Paige.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Let's Talk About It, the Skate Ontario podcast. Don't forget to follow us on social media. I'm at Skating PJ. Until next time, bye for now.